We're on Daf Chav Ches Amud Beis, and we're up to Omar Mar, and that is a little bit below Tosfos Ika, which is the last Tosfos on the page. And you'll see Omar Mar. Now at this point, the Gemara is going to go back to the Braisa about something called Kur. So I'm going to give you, to the best of my ability, a little bit of a recap of that Braisa. And that Braisa was earlier on the same Amud here. And it discussed Kar, something called Kar, and something called Kafnios. So just by way of review, we have something called Kar that has to do with the bark on a date tree, which at the beginning of its formation, this bark and this branch is soft and it can be eaten, but with the passage of time, I guess as we get closer to the summer months, it starts getting hard. And the Bryce establishes that if you get it when it's, if you peel it off when it's still young, it's soft, it's edible, and therefore it's nikach bekesef maaseh. However, the Bryce says that although it fills the requirement of pri mi pri, and therefore it's nilkach bekesef maaseh, but nevertheless, it's eno metame tumas ochlin. Why? Because we view it as part of the tree, and therefore it's eitz, and it's not an ochel. Even though theoretically you could peel off this bark and eat it in its youth, it's soft. Then we get to something called kafnios, which we said were unripened, immature dates, and they too are nilkachos bekesef maaser. But here, they have the status of Ochlin, and they're Metami Tumas Ochlin. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that Kar, Hareyu Ke'etz L'chol Dovar, El Shenikach B'Kesef Maaser, which seems to reiterate what we saw in the Tanakhama, that as far as, let's say, Tumas Ochlin are concerned, it has the status of Eitz, it's not an Ochel. It's nilkach bekesef maaser, as we said before, because it's pre-mi-pri. Rabbi Yehuda's only going to argue against the Tanakhama with regard to kafnios, right, the immature dates. Because, whereas the Chachamim said about kafnios that they are nilkachos bekesef maaser, the implication is that maybe as far as the Chiyuv Maaser is concerned, we don't know what the Tanakhama would say, but Rabbi Yehuda clearly commits himself to the position that Pturos Min HaMaaser, that because these dates are immature, therefore they're Potter Min HaMaaser. The implication of the Chachamim, since the Chachamim said with regarding kafnios, that harein kipri l'chol divrayim, sounds like they're saying three things. Number one, it's nilkach bekesef maaser. Number two, it's metame tumas ochlin. And number three, it's chayiv in maaser. So Rabbi Yehuda is only arguing, out of all the different, you know, parts of the mishbetzet, he's only arguing in one case, and that is the case of kafnios, whether they're potum in a maaser or chayiv in maaser. And Rabbi Yehuda's argument is that for Masa you need what's called Gemar Peri. We don't have Gemar Peri. The Tanakhama, on the other hand, would hold that since kafnios could be eaten as such, therefore that's considered enough of Gemar Peri to be Chayiv in Masa. But one thing you have to grant me, as far as Kar is concerned, there is no machlokas here recorded in this Braisa. Both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda agree that although Kar is nilkach bekesef maaser, but nevertheless, it is is not metami tumas ochlin, and Rabbi Yehuda dramatizes this by saying harehu keitz l'chol dvaro, and hence we're ready for our Gemara. Omar Mar, Rabbi Yehuda Omer kar harehu keitz l'chol dvaro vel shenika pekesev maser hainu tanakama. There's no discrepancy here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama with regard to kar. Both agree that although that's nilkach bekesev maaser, because right now it's soft and edible, but nevertheless, since it's so full of hakshos, it's really eitz, and therefore it's not mitamei tumas ochlin. So the Gemara now is going to spend a long time trying to figure out an afgemina between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Omar Abaye, kar sheshloko ika beinayim. Now, we're talking about taking the car and changing it in a very radical way, such that you don't have to be desperate to eat it, but that it's a real foodstuff. And you process it, we'll see how you process it, and now it becomes, let's say, a dessert on a food plate. Would it now be mekabel tumas ochel? Do we assume that whether it's an ochel or not, as far as tumas ochlin, has to be defined by the essence? Essentially, the kar is part of the bark of the tree, and it doesn't have a shem ochel. It's eitz and not ochel. Or do we say, no, I took something that is eitz, and I processed it in such a way, then now it became ochel. I don't have to give it an essential status that's irreversible. I can change it through human intervention and make it into an ochel. And now, henceforth, it'll be mekabel tumas ochlin. So these two definitions, according to Abaye, are the subject of the machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. What did he do with this kar? Shloko. Shloko is almost a synonym of bishlo. The difference between shlokos and bishl is that shlokos are cooked for a very, very long time, overly cooked, and now he was able to take something that is essentially eitz and convert it into an ochel, or tigno. Another option is he can fry it on a pan and it becomes edible. More than just edible, you know, it's really edible. Which is a great idea, you know, if you you talk about, you know, the undernourishment throughout the world. We now have an ability, at least with these kinds of date trees, that we can take the bark of the tree and we can cook it until it becomes edible. I mean, that could solve a lot of the problems of undernourishment in the world. So the Tanakhama is going to tell us that now you made it into an ochel. It's metami tumas ochlin. You've changed it, panim chadoshes bolakan, so to speak. And the diuk in the brisa is because if you notice, we'll go back to the brisa one more time, the Tanakhama says, just eno metami tumas ochlin. That's all he says about kar. Rabbi Yehuda went a little bit more dramatic, and Rabbi Yehuda added, Harehu ke'etz l'chol davar. Why did Rabbi Yehuda add kar harehu ke'etz l'chol davar? He wanted to tell you that kar is eitz, period. I don't want to talk to you about it. There's no room for discussion about kar. It is essentially eitz. You take an eitz and you make it into food, it's not mekabel tumas ochlin. Yeah, I'm just thinking out of the box here. What would be today? You know, today, with all the technology, they're able to create food out of who knows what. Okay, cloning, I don't know. You know, maybe cloning, you started with an ochel, so it remains an ochel. But you can manufacture things chemically that are edible. And this, again, how we're trying to solve the problem of undernourishment in the world. I mean, you have issues of meat. You know, I'm talking about the question whether it's basar, whether it's nevela, whether it's milchix, fleishix, what is it? You know, you could manufacture all sorts of things. Would they be makabel tumas ochlet? And I'm wondering if you could create an ochel out of something that's not an ochel. Would this be, according to Abaye, the subject of machlok shin the Tanakam? The Tanakam says, let's look at it now. It's an ochel. It's olal shulchan malachim. It's bishalakov. And therefore it's makabel tumas ochel. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's eitz. And again, the diuk of Abaye in the Brice, I just want to reiterate this because it helps me a lot, is because Rabbi Yehuda was very dramatic. When he spoke about kar, he added that phrase, hareyu ke'etz bi'alma. Maskif lo rava, mi'ikol amandi yom ashlok ovetigno lo. Conceptually, you're right. It could be that Rabbi Yehuda would hold that kar could, you know, we could accept such a theory that kar is eitz in its very essence, no matter how you process it. But the problem is that I have a braisa. Now, the braisa does not address the case of kar. So, in order to understand Rava's objection to Abaye, we have to add a kal v'chomer here, because kar is not mentioned in the braisa. Ha'or v'ashilya. So we're talking about an animal, and after the animal dies, we skin its hides, and we find inside the animal a placenta. Eino metame tumas ochlin. Okay, at this point, I understand. You know, hides are not edible. You can chew on it, maybe, but you can't swallow it. And therefore, it's not metame tumas ochlin. A placenta is like disgusting. You know, maybe you could salvage it and reprocess it or something. But in its present state, nobody's going to eat a placenta of an animal. But yet, the Brisa tells me, like an aval. Again, it doesn't have the word aval here, but here I would have the aval. This is Rav Goldwicht, you know, Meir Goldwicht's famous aval, 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 aval. Or sheshloko v'shilya shechishe v'leo liochlo metami tumas ochlin. There is a possibility of taking or and cooking it for a million years until finally you soften it and you can eat it. The hide of an animal could be edible. Even a shilya. Now, in the case of shilya, the Gemara, the Brisa doesn't spell out exactly how he prepares it. So I'm going to read to you a note here. He based it on the Chasdei David. He says, "Or eno roy lachila machmas kishyoso." It's so tough that it's inedible, but you can soften it. And therefore, he says, "Ein dai bekach shechoshav aleh liochla." You can't make it into an ochla by just designating it mentally as an edible. V'dafka liachar shlika. After you overcook it, then it's metami tumas ochla. I will shil your raka. It's very soft flesh. V'shayich liochla el she'ein ochlin osa machmas miusa. Now, this is not a dish that you want to serve al shulchan malach. Lekach, but dai b'machshava l'chud l'achshiva ochel. Umeidach, shlikas ha-shilya l'chuda eino machshiva osa ke-ochel. In other words, unless he made a decision that he's going to serve this on a platter for a meal, if he hasn't made that decision, you could cook it from now till doomsday, but it's still mos. And therefore, it's not an ochel. So again, you have two cases where you can take something that's not an ochel and make it into an ochel, but in two different processes. One process is in the case of or, and that's shlika. Machshav alone won't do it. And another process, in the case of Shilya, is Machshava, to remove the barrier of Moz. And Shlika won't do it without Machshava. And this is the Shtikl Torah of the Chasdei David, who is a super commentary on the Tosefta. Have you ever read his works? He was a prolific writer. Just out of curiosity, what would be your knee-jerk response? His name is Rabbi David Pardo. Have you ever read any of his works? I promise you, you have. You just didn't know it. Because his commentary on Tanakh is like, you can't buy a Tanakh today without his commentary. It's a Metzudas David, Metzudas Tzion. This is what we learned when we were in, third grade, right? That's the Chasdei David. He was a prolific writer. I tried to buy the Chasdei David, couldn't buy it. You have to be very wealthy. But I do have some of his other svarim. He wrote a major work on the Mishnayos, commentary on the Mishnayos, called Shoshanim LeDavid. I have actually two copies. It's a fluke. I never have two copies of the same book. It's published in Italy about 400 years ago. He was an Italian. The name of his yeshiva, by the way, was Torah Umada. So don't think that YU was the first to come up with Torah Umada. The Italians were very broad-minded. The Kesef Mishnah, by the way, was originally published, 3 out of 4 volumes, in Venice. The last volume, I think, was published in Eretz Yisrael, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, getting back to our sugya, so now we have the end of this brisa, and the brisa says the following: Metamin tumas ochlin. Now you have something that, in its natural state, let's take the case of R by its nature is exactly like the bark of a tree. It's eitz bi'alma or it's R bi'alma, and it's not metamin tumas ochlin. If R, which is real eitz, is mitame tumas ochlin in a case of shlika, how much more so kal v'chomer, says Rava, kar, which in its natural state is edible. Again, you and I wouldn't want to eat it unless we were really desperate, but it is in a soft state. Maybe you could chew on it or suck on it. How much more so after you cook it, it's certainly going to be metame tumas ochlin. And this brisa apparently is part of the canon. It is Elisman de Pollock. There was no one who questioned the principles that are codified in this brisa. Therefore, how could Abai tell us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you take kar and you cook it and overcook it, it still remains eitz bi'alma? That's not true. Your premise, Abai, that once it's eitz, it's always eitz, is incorrect. Elam Arava. Now we're back to the drawboard. We have to come up with an afkamina between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, and here Rava throws a real curveball at us. The machlokas about kar doesn't belong here in Masechta Erevin. It doesn't even belong in Masechta Taros, it belongs in Masechta Brachos. That's the machlokas about kar. Ikabeinayu bracha. What bracha do you make on kar? The Tanakama did not go as dramatic as Rabbi Yehuda to call it eitz, meaning that if you have something that grows from the ground and it's edible, it's a pri. And therefore, in Hilchos Brachos, you make a bracha called Borei Pri Hadam. Kar has a Shchal Shem Pri. Again, I'm a little perplexed because in its natural state, it's not Metami Tumas Ochlin. So you're going to give it a Shem Pri, but it's not an Ochel. That's paradoxical. But according to the Tanakama that omitted this very dramatic extreme statement that a kar is an eitz, you make a borei pri hadama on kar. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, takes a look at Kar, and he says, look, let's be honest about it. It's the bark of a tree, and if you wait until the summertime, it's going to be totally inedible. That's not what we call a pre-Adama. Pre-Adama has to be something which is sold on the market as payro, so to speak. In its present state, it's a pre. And it's not going to, you know, ripen on the tree to the point in which it becomes inedible. And therefore, we're going to apply the principle called Sofo Lahakshos. And in Hilchos Brachos, if you want to upgrade from Shachol Niyabidvaro to Bor Pri Adama, you cannot do so in a case of Sofo Lahakshos. Again, this might be a unique halach in Hilchos Brachos, but it doesn't have a shame pre if it's Sofo Lahakshos. Those two are mutually exclusive. You cannot say pre, check that off, and then say Sofo Lahakshos. That's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda in Brachos. The Itmar we learned in the base medrash of Amoraim, but we're going to apply the Machlokas Amoraim to the Machlokas Tanoim. Kar, Rabbi, now, here you have to be very careful. Rav Yehuda, right, because we're talking about the Amora, Omar, Borei Pri Adam. And that Rav Yehuda is going to reflect the Shita of the Tanakama, of our Bryce. Ushmuel Omar Shahakal Nia Bidvaro. Rabbi Yehuda Omar Bor Pri Adama Uchlahu. Now again, it's very tricky. The word Uchla is paradoxical because it's not Mitami Tumas Ochle. And yet, it's called an Ochle. He writes, I'm not sure who he's quoting here. He doesn't give it a name. Oh, I'm sorry. He calls it the Ra'ah. I don't know that there's a Ra'ah in Erevin, so check me out on that. Anyway, he writes the following. Afal pisha kor roi lachila hu bi'atzmuso eno pri afshu rach. So even if it's in its immature state, early state when it's soft, it's not called a pri. V'kevan shesofa lachshos v'lo ye roi lachila Eino nechshav b'chal pri. Just one second. I'm sorry. I may have messed up over here. Just one second. Yeah, I was trying to figure out Rav Yehuda. Just one second. I'm sorry. The Ra'ah is two paragraphs. I read to you prematurely the paragraph that addresses the Shita of Shmuel. But let's go back to the Shita of Rav Yehud. He says the following. One second. Rav Yehuda Omar Borei Pri Adama Uchlahu. He says, Eino Pri Ha'etz. Now, the Ra'ah is bothered by a different question. Why not jump two notches? We have Shakol Nivadvar as the lowest notch. Then we notch it up by one. And we get to Bori Pri Adama. We can notch it up even higher and get to Bori Pri Eitz. That's what bothers the Ra'ah. The Ra'ah says if you're classifying Kar, according to Rav Yehuda, as Ochel, then why not call it Pri Ha'etz? He says, Eino Pri Ha'etz, Elohu Eitz Atzmo. This car is like really, this is some entity. Write a book on car. He says it's Eitz. It's not Pri Ha'etz. It's funny, because it's like we're throwing three balls at this car, and it strikes out twice. It misses hit the ball, but once it hits the ball, if you ask me, What's its status as far as Tumas Ochlin is concerned? It's Eitz. It's not Makabel Tumas Ochlin. Ask me what's its status as far as the Bracha Bar Priya Eitz. It's not a Priya Eitz, it's Eitz. Eitz Atzmo. And therefore, it is disqualified for Bari Priya Eitz. But ask me, what's its status as far as Borei Pri HaAdama is concerned? Says the Ra'ah, according to this Rav Yehuda, guess what? Birchaso kibirchas hayirokos sha'af heim tzomchos me'akarka v'lo min ha'etz. Right, so we have Pri HaEtz and we have Pri HaAdama. And they're two separate brachos. He says, when you have a yerek, it's not a pre-ha-eitz, and therefore it's disqualified from pre-ha-eitz because it's not growing on a tree. Yerokos grow from the ground. And now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can classify kar as a yerek, according to the rules of brachos. Why? Because there are two types of peros. There's a peri that's part of the adama, and there's a peri that grows from a tree. Now, in the case of yerokos, I understand very well, says the Ra'ah, it's a bar pri adama because it doesn't grow from the tree, it grows from the ground. It's a pri ha adama. Kar is now an extended definition of pri hadama. Why? Because essentially it's not a pri at all. It's eitz, and I'll prove it to you. It's not makabel tumas ochlin because it's eitz. It's not a pri eitz because it's the eitz atzmo. But yet it's a pri hadama. So we're broadening the category and the definition of pri hadama to include anything that's part of the Adama and is edible, even though it's not a pre-Adama. It becomes a pre-Adama almost by default. I can't call it a pre-Eitz, and if I fall into pre-Adama, it's edible, it's Eitz, so what do I do with an edible Eitz? I call it a pre-Adama. That's the Rabbah. Pili ploy. I mean, in a million years, I never would have said that kar, which is eitz, is called a pre-adama. I mean, when you call it pre, it's not a pre. It's not something that's produced by the adama. And for the same token that you exclude it, you disqualify from pre-eitz because it's the eitz itself. I would have disqualified it from pre-adama. No, pre-adama is a different definition than pre-eitz. And the Pella is, you can have something that, as far as Tumah V'Tahara is concerned, it's not an ochel. And yet it's pri adam. So in Hilchos Brachos, it's called pri adam. And that's the paradox of Rav Yehuda according to the Ra'ah. Then we get to Shmuel. Shmuel says, Shakol ni b'dvaro. I mean, that I understand. It's so full of hakshos. You can't call it a pri.
Is there a definition of Tumas Ochlin?
Well, I'm sure we'd have to learn, you know, Masechta Taras for that. I'm not a Bucky in Tumas Ochlin, but what I am saying is that an Ochel is not something that's edible. An Ochel is something that's not an Eitz. Meaning, in Tumas Ochlin, what's antithetical to an Ochel is not something that's inedible, but rather something that's an Eitz. So you can have something that's edible, and it's an Eitz, and it's not Makabel Tumas Ochlin. In Hilchos Brachos, you're benefiting from it because it's edible. And now the question is where to fit it into the constellation of brachos. And the Ra'ah says, Pili Ploim, according to this Rabbi Yehuda, we can fit it into the category of pre-hadama, as we said before, because of this expanded definition of pre-hadama.
To me, that makes a lot of sense, because it's nourished from the hadama.
But again, it's hard to call it a pre. I mean,
my question really is one of Tumas Ochlin.
So hopefully we'll try to see if, as we go along, we can, you know, the Gemara is going to talk about Tumas Ochel.
You have to be defined as an Ochel Milachatchila. Here we're talking about something that only b'diavad becomes an ochel.
Right, it's an ochel because you're desperate and you have nothing else to eat, so you eat the bark of a tree. As long as it's young and it's soft, before it hardens. Now we get
The Indians used to eat barks of trees when they had headaches. You get aspirin from barks of trees. Acetylsalicylic acid comes from the tree barks.
Right, I would tell you this, Rabbi. If I was an Indian, a Jewish Indian, I don't know if there ever was such a thing, I would not make a bracha on eating the bark of a tree. I'll tell you why. Because when you eat something for a fuwa, you don't make a bracha on it.
Agreed.
But the Gemara house somehow is assuming that there's some caloric and sweetness to this bark of the tree. Again, it's only a specific tree. We're talking about a day tree. But let's get back to Ilchus Brachos for a minute. I mean, again, you know, you're challenging me in Ilchus Tumas Ochlin, and I plead the fifth right now. There's a lot to know about Tumas Ochlin. But as far as Brachos is concerned, Shmuel says, wait a minute, this is really not a pre-Adama. Shahakol Nia Bidvaro. So I want to read to you, now I'm ready for the Ra'ah on Shmuel. He says, Al af shekar roi lachila, right, it is edible, but batzmusa ain't no pri. Again, honestly, the Ra'olashi Tussle makes a lot of sense. He's really, I think at this point, jumping into the paradox of Rabbi Yehuda to explain Shmuel. Shmuel is stuck with this paradox. How can you tell me that it's not a Priya Eitz because it's an Eitz Biatzmuso and then turn around and call it a Priya Adama? The Afshu Rach, even though at this point it's still soft, it gets hard later on in the season. V'sofo lahakshos v'lo yaroi lachila, and therefore eino nechshav b'chlal pri le'inyin bracha. V'af eino kiyerek shehu priyakarka. So the equation of Yerek and Kar, which was accepted by Rav Yehuda, is unacceptable in Shmuel's eyes. You cannot compare Yerokos to Kar. Yerokos is not Sofa Lahakshos. Yerokos is a pre-Adam. If you ask me what Peros does the Adam itself produce, it's Yerokos. And on every Yerek, we're going to make a pre-Adam. But Kar is not a pre, it's the eitz itself. The lachain ain levarich olabori pri hadoma el berchasol shahakol. So what is shahakol? Shahakol is this potpourri, you know, this fallback position where you have something that you're benefiting from it, you're enjoying it, and you're not eating it because the Indians, you know, because it has aspirin in it as a refuah, and therefore you have to make a bracha on it. It's kiderech achila. He has hanah. Hanenim and olam hazeh b'lo bracha kilumah. But what bracha should I make on it? The most basic bracha besides shahakol is pre-adam. And it doesn't even fit into the category of pre-adam. So the fallback position is this generic bracha which is called shahakol niya bidvara. The only thing that bothers me about the ra'ah is I'm not sure why the ra'ah feels that the variable in this equation of understanding Shmuel that's absolutely critical is called Sofa Lahakshos. I think what he means by Sofa Lahakshos is that let's not fool ourselves. This is the bark of a tree. And I'll prove it to you. It's immature right now, but you know, ultimately the bark of a tree is going to be tough, and the rains are going to fall, and after the rains fall, it's going to be a full-fledged bark. This, you know, you grabbed a little bit of the bark before the rains fell, but it's eitz. It's eitz bi'alma. So I think that sofa lahakshos, in my understanding of the ra'ah, means it's eitz bi'alma. And if it's eitz bi'alma, no way you can call it a pri. It's not at all similar to the urakos. And therefore, if a fallback position is shakol near bidvar. Is therefore lo mevarchin eluyeh bari pri adama. Amar le Shmuel le Rav Yehuda. Shinina. Right, so he gives him a compliment. You know, whenever you see a compliment to Gemara, you know he's about to slug him up to pieces, right? So you're the sharp one. And he says, you know what? I rethought it out. And maybe we can find a shtickel raya. We were wondering about the possibility of equating kar with yirakos and generating a bracha bar pri adam. I said, Shmuel, I said that it's so full of akshos. And that, therefore what? It's not similar to yirakos. Well, guess what? Even yirakos are sofa lahakshos. And therefore, shinina. So this is the exception to the rule. Here he's not buttering him up, but he's telling him, you know what, you're the sharp one, and I rethought it. And Rav Yehuda, you came up with the right answer. Why? Kavasech mistabra. This is intellectual honesty in the Gemara. Da'atz known. So full of akshos. Now, I have a suspicion that when he quotes tznon, he's referring to many, many different vegetables. Tznon is just one example of them. And it's so full of akshos, which means that if you don't harvest these radishes, ba'od moed, then they are going to get very hard. And yet, it doesn't bother me. Why? Because I'm going to cut it down while it's still soft. And therefore, mevarchen aleh bari pri adama. Let's apply the same logic to kar, and even though it's sofa lahakshos, we're going to make the bracha of bari pri adama. So sofa lahakshos cannot be a reason to be mafkia the bracha of bari pri adama. I'll prove it to you from tznon. Now it's interesting. At this point, the Gemara is going to jump in, almost like on behalf of Shmuel, even though Shmuel himself admitted that Rabbi Yehuda's logic is compelling based on an analogy to Tznon. And the Gemara says there's no analogy to Tznon. So the Gemara, in effect, is defending Shmuel's original position. Velohi. Tznon, nate inchi adaite de pugla. You know, if you plant a date tree, you want to produce dates. And that's going to take a while. You know, it's going to go through the various seasons, and the bark of the tree is going to get stark, it's going to get hard, it's so full of akshos, and that was all part of his original das. This is where I always quote the Chazon Ish about making a bar priya eitz on orange juice. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever recited a bar priya eitz on orange juice, but if you did so, I would give you yashikah. I don't do it because I can't break away from my tradition. But in Lumdus, the Chazon Ish is 100% correct, because in Brachos, it really depends upon what your intention was when you planted it. So you've got these Florida, what do they call them, juice oranges. You normally juice is called Zambi Alma, and therefore in fallback position you make a shako. That's what we do on orange juice. But if the planting was done for the sake of the juice, that, says the Chazon Ish, is enough to be koveh bracha bar priyates. And I think the raya would be from our sugya. I don't know if the Chazon Ish quotes our sugya. But tznon is planted for the sake of pulga. Pulga means pugla, not pulga, but pugla is for the sake of cutting it off before it gets too hard on the ground. But dikla, you've got a date tree, a palm tree. What are you going to do with it? Ilonati inchi adaiti de kora? You'd be wasting a lot of good money, a potential of financial success, if you started stripping this young, immature date tree of its bark. Because you're going to just impede, if not destroy, the process of the development of the tree. And therefore, nobody would plant a tree in order to produce the kar of the tree, the bark of the tree, but rather he wants to eat the dates that are produced upon the tree. And therefore, unlike other yirakos, which may be sofan lahakshos, we are not going to make a bar pri adama on kar. We're going to accept the shita of Rav Yehuda. And the Gemara adds a postscript to this whole story. Even though Shmuel gave this, accolades to Rav Yehuda, and even brought a proof from Tznon, is Hilchas HaKavosei de Shmuel. We're going to go back to the Psak of Shmuel. We are not going to make a Bar Pri Adama on Kar. And the reason for that is it's Sofa Lahakshos, which means that this is the reason and the das that he had when he planted the tree. When you plant a day tree, it's for Sofa Lahakshos. Because Sofa Lahakshos is the precondition to produce the dates on the trees, which is your ultimate goal.
You had a das... To eat the pears of the tree and not the bark. The ikar is the
pears. Right. And so, and certainly the dasnit.
Rav Shlomo Zalman bases it on this, that the bracha on chocolate is borei pri ha'etz and right. Not charcoal. Same principle.
Yeah.
Because the beans that you're on the tree is the purpose of is for the beans.
And I would bet my bottom dollar, Rabbi, I don't know, I can't prove this, that Rav Shlomo Zalman is standing on the shoulders of the Chazon Ish. Because the Chazon Ish insisted that in Hilchas Brachos, we have to go back to the Netiyah. And we have to ask ourselves, for what purpose did you plant it? And the Gemara is saying that you planted a date tree, not for its bark. This Yankel Beryl decided he wants to eat the bark. He's desperate, whatever it might be. Maybe it's got aspirin in it. And he eats the bark. But don't tell me that it was planted. You know, if I was wondering, let's say somebody would tell me, he takes a Shavua d'Oraisa, I planted this date tree simply for the bark of the tree for the car. I'm a car man. I would say, butler daitet zel kol adam. I don't think it would change the halacha one iota. Because we're going to accept Shmuel, and we're going to paskin that the bracha is shahakol niyabidvara. Okay, Rabosai. Now, we get back to Erev. And here, I want to give you a little bit of an introduction to a sugya, a major sugya here in this perek that we're going to start Mirtz Hashem on Yom Rishon. And it's all, this whole introduction is based on a sugya on Daf Pei, that's about 50 pages down the line here, about Erev Tchumin and other kinds of Erevin, which is called Mazon Shtei Seudos. Okay. So for Erevin, we need Mazon Shtei Seudos. Okay. So let me say a few things about Mazon Shtei Seudos, and all this is the introduction, which is based on the sugyas way later on in Erev. Number one, the shear of Mazon Shtei Seudos applies in three categories of Erev. Number one, Erev Chatzeros. Number two, Shitufei Muvos, which means that you have many different Chatzeros that share one Mavui. And number three, Erev Tchumen. In all three cases, we require Mazon Shtei Seudos. Now, the reason we require Mazon Shtei Seudos, Bigadol, again, this is just, surfing the surface, is because he can create two Seudos of Shabbos from this food, and that's called Makom Dira. So, in all three categories of Erevin, the common denominator is what we call Makom Dira, which depends upon Seuda. So you live where you eat. And on Shabbos we eat two Seudos. Now the truth of the matter is, on Shabbos we eat three Seudos. And sometimes that's very relevant to many different halachas. Like for example, we spoke about once, Hatzolah min Adleika. So we're going to allow you to save three Seudos. But the basic fibric of Seudos Shabbos is two Seudos. The third Seuda is a little bit of a nachschlepper. Again, I don't want to insult the third Seuda because there's a famous statement of the Chidah. He says that the main schar you'll get is for Seuda Shlishis. But anyway. Now, he leaves enough mazon for Shtei Seudos. That's number one. Now, what about Pas? Now we're up to number two, right? So we have Mazon Shtei Seudos in all these three Erev. So there's a sugya later on, again this is Pei Beis, that in the case of Pas, what you do is you leave enough Pas for two sudos, which means, again the details will work out, but it means that you have one loaf of bread for one suda, another loaf of bread for another suda. That's called mazon shtei sudos. Okay. Now we get to the next level. You don't even need pas. All you need is dover hamelafes boes apas. Habol lafes es apas. Right? Something that accompanies a bread. So you have the staff of life is bread, that's going to be, let's bake bread. And now you have food that is eaten in a meal. And here, what we need is, again, I'm going to just give you the language, we'll have to fill in the details. We need enough lilafes pas shel shtei sudos. So we need enough food, lilafes, one pas for one suda, and also we're going to need a double quantity, and that's going to be lilafos as a pas for the second suda. So we need either two loaves of bread, which are for two sudos, or some sort of food, which is called lilafes boas a pas, but for two pitot. Then we get to mashke. Now he's leaving a beverage. And now, for a beverage, he says he needs kamus hanitzreches lishtia shel shtei sudos. So we'd have to be meshayer how much beverage we would have in each one of these two sudos, and therefore we're going to double that amount, and that's called mashke. Then he has another category, which he calls dover abo lekinuach suuda. So it's not lelafos bos apas. Again, I don't know what your minig is, but my personal minig, everybody has their own minig, is when they bring out dessert, we make a separate brach on dessert. I don't know what your minig is. Bring out cake or whatever they bring, fruit at the end of the meal. That's not called the lafos bosa pas, so it requires its own brach. Again, I'm not, don't quote me on this. And now we have kinua. He can create an eruv with a dover abola kinuach, but it's got to be kamus Haru'uya l'kinuach shtei su'udos. Again, the same shtei su'udos. The Gemara now, which we're going to study in Mirtz Hashem on Yom Rishon, is going to get into the details about different types of food and beverages and the possibility of creating an Erev with these types of foods and beverages and what is the minimum quantity, the kamus hanitzreches from these various minim, in order to create mazon shtei seudos of what's called an adam beinani. I mean, you could have a small person who doesn't need that much food, his stomach is somewhat small, you could have a large person, og melech haboshen, he needs kisuda shloma melech peshaita. We're going to talk about a person who's called an adam beinani. And our sugya here, in this perek, is going to establish that we use an Adam Beinani, which is called a Kula, and that's called Misharim Lahakel. So Misharim Lahakel, Lahakel, is going to be one of the major principles here when we decide how much we need. So for example, you could have someone who needs a larger Seuda. He's what's called a Rav Tan, he's a hungry type of person. He has an insatiable appetite. But we're always going to apply the principle of Misharin Lekula, and we're going to say that even though he himself would not be satiated by this quality, by this quantity of foodstuff, but nevertheless an Adam Beinani would be satiated, and therefore it's considered Lekula, sufficient for an Eruv. And we're going to apply the din of Misharin Lekula to reduce the level of mazon shtei sudos. In a case of, for example, Zakin v'chole, they don't eat that much. their stomach can't tolerate that much food, and they'll be satiated with a smaller amount of food. Again, we're going to apply the principle of Misharin Lakula, such that for you and I, we would need a greater quantity for an Erev, but for him, if he's a Chol or a Zaken, he'll suffice with a smaller amount. That gives it the Chashivus of Mazon, of Makom Mazono, and therefore it's Makomo, and that's the key to Erev. So let's just make a note of where we got up to, and in Yirtzeh Hashem B'Yom Rishon we'll start with Gufa, and Gufa is 6 lines up from the bottom of Koach. So Yirtzeh Hashem, we should have Koach to go on in Erevin and finish the Masechta at some point. First we have to finish Shabbos. And I'll wish everyone a good Shabbos. If you're available tonight, I give a shiur on Parsha.